Welcome to this new PatchyCon appointment. I'm going to introduce with pleasure Bilgin Ibrahim, that will talk about cloud-native camera design patterns. Enjoy.
Hello, everyone. Thanks for coming. I have the pleasure to have the last talk just before the lunch, but hopefully I'll be quick with my 150 slides. So I work for Red Hat as a consultant, and as part of my job, I help different customers use things like Apache Camel, Keras, CXF, ActiveMQ. I'm also a committer for ISIS, Camel, and Offbeat projects. And I've written two small books for Apache Camel. In the second book called Camel Design Patterns, I basically try to collect together all my experiences and learnings of using Camel in the last 5-6 years at different customers, and created basically around documented 20 patterns. You can say that not all of them are patterns. So there are tips and techniques you can use to write better Camel applications. Since then, certain things have been changing in the last couple of years. I mean, the way we provision infrastructure has been moving more to the cloud. The way we deploy application has moved to containers such as Docker. And the way we architect and design applications is moving into microservices. And even the development methodologies, it's not just waterfall or agile even. Now teams want to do DevOps, and all these trends do affect the way we design and run Camel applications. So my goal is just to show you how all these trends affect writing large-scale Camel applications mainly. You've seen at the topic I have the word cloud native, so let's try to define that. And in order to do that, I have to define a few other terms. Things like web scale, which originated from large cloud firms such as Google, Amazon, Netflix, Facebook, and it was used to describe the way these companies provision infrastructure, run application at really large volumes. But this term didn't go any further. So then the 12 factor apps was coined from the Heroku guys, and it was set of 12 principles of writing application that run on the Heroku platform. So that was, I think, gave something more concrete. But having just 12 wasn't enough. Then there was post around 13, 14 factor apps, etc. I think the latest cool buzzword is cloud native, start by Cloud Foundry. And the best definition I found was that it's an application that is highly scalable and resilient, and it's created to be run on the cloud. And by cloud, I don't mean just infrastructure. So a cloud can be consumed as infrastructure as a service, as a platform as a service, or software as a service. So it doesn't matter what kind of cloud it is. As long as it is highly scalable and resilient application, you can say you are writing a cloud-native application. And recently, Cloud Native Computing Foundation was created. That is basically part of the Linux Foundation, and it hosts other projects which are cloud native friendly. So there are projects such as Kubernetes, Prometheus, Zipkin, these kind of projects which you need in a cloud native environment. The other terms such as cloud aware and cloud ready, and these are usually used to describe applications which you can run on the cloud, but they are not created for the cloud. Maybe they won't scale automatically, or maybe it's difficult to provision them and access them. The most common architectural style for writing highly scalable and resilient application is a microservices. And the most common way to deploy those applications is Docker. And as such, every Docker orchestration framework now can call itself a cloud native platform. And there are many of those, Docker Swarm, Amazon Container Services, Kubernetes, etc. And the common thing between this though is they provide service management, so how you discover and scale services. They provide scheduling, that is ability to start containers on different host machines. And they also provide resource management, so the ability to put limits and quotas, etc. what we'll look at today is Kubernetes. The main reason we'll look into that is because my experience in the last year has been using Kubernetes. But there are also other good reasons to look at it, such as the technology. And it is based on Google's Borg project, which Google have been using in the last 15 years to run containers. Another reason would be the community. It's not in Apache Foundation, but it is really active. There are more than 1,000 contributors and lots of commits, as you can see. And even in terms of popularity, it is 4 times bigger than its nearest rival. In the same space, we also have Apache Mesos. They are in the container orchestration space, if you know about it. And there are also bigger companies who do use and support Kubernetes. Another reason would be if we look at all the products and startups and companies that are coming up around Kubernetes, there are all kinds of solution providers, distributions, and other tools around monitoring, networking, storage. So they all do provide some kind of Kubernetes services. So even though the project is just 2 years old, it is very active at all levels. Let's say I've managed to convince you to use Kubernetes, and what are the ways to use Kubernetes? I mean, you can always install it from scratch, but there are also sub-projects of Kubernetes which do provide scripts and tools to run Kubernetes on different cloud providers. There are also services from, there is a Google Container Engine, which is a place where you go and just create a Kubernetes cluster. You've seen yesterday that Amazon Azure also now have added Kubernetes as a solution, so you can use Azure. And there are also companies like StackPoint, which just provide Kubernetes management services. So there are many ways, but probably for a developer, the best way to start would be just to use a VM or Vagrant or the latest thing, which is called Minikube, that would start in one command on your local machine, a Kubernetes cluster. The Fabricate team have also created a Maven plugins around it, so you can use a Maven plugin cluster start, and that will start the Kubernetes cluster on your local machine, and that will be the same Kubernetes that you can that you'll be using on the cloud with maybe hundreds of instances. The beauty is you can start it locally, and it's the same instance on the cloud with the same API, the same version, so you can try your application locally easily. If I want to describe Kubernetes in one slide, at architectural level, you have something called master. This is the way it coordinates and manages the other nodes called either minions or workers. And in these nodes, you would have the Docker containers with the CAML application running. And this architecture is quite common for, I would say, any container orchestration platform. You would scale this part when the load on your application increases, and maybe this part highly available by starting 3 or 5 instances required by etcd. So you can use Minikube to develop locally. You can package your applications as a container, that is Docker, the more popular one, or Rocket. And what you deploy then to Kubernetes is called pod. So pod is a group of whales. Together they are called pod, and the deployment unit basically is pod. Typically pod contains one Docker container, but sometimes you may want to have 2 Docker containers together in a pod. You can label pretty much everything, pods and nodes, and later you can use these labels for different purposes. Namespaces are another thing which are used to isolate resources. For example, in one Kubernetes cluster, you can create dev, test, pre-prod namespaces. Yeah, and they basically represent your environments. Then, even though they share the same virtual or physical infrastructure, they are totally isolated environments to deploy and test your application. There's tools for managing configurations and secrets, or manage persistent storage, etc. Now, since we have, let's go to the next one. We have Kubernetes. we know how to start it. Let's see, as a Camel developer, what you have to do. I mean, the first thing is you have to decide what will be your runtime and how you will package your Camel application. Currently, you can do that in all of these options. Basically, you can put a Camel route in a servlet container, package your app as a var, and then put it in Tomcat. You know, you can put it in application server or OSGI server, such as Keraf. But these options are not very popular in a container world. In a container world, you want your application and its runtime to be immutable and packaged. So the preferred options are things like immutable Keraf distribution, which basically packages Keraf and your application in one zip file, and you put later that zip file into Docker container or something. But the difference is, it's not anymore just a var. It is full Keraf and your application, and it doesn't change it anymore. A similar option is Wildfly Swarm, which creates, again, at compile time, a small application server. It doesn't have all the whole JE stack, but it's only the libraries you need for your application, plus your application on top of it. The most popular, or I would say preferred, option is Camel Boot, which is Spring Boot and Camel. So that's not 2018 yet. That's the version of Camel 2.18, which was released a few weeks back. And there we have, the community has done a lot of improvements into Camel and Spring Boot integration. So there are auto configurations and starters, and as Klaus showed earlier, you can go on the Spring website and start the Camel project there. And Spring Boot seems to be the most popular way of writing microservices nowadays. So in Camel, we've improved the support for that. So let's say we've packaged, we created a route, we put it in Spring Boot. The next thing you have to do is actually put that in a Docker container. And there are solutions such as centralized way of creating Docker containers. This can be your platform, such as Mesos or Cloud Foundry, that can build your code and put in Docker container, or you can manually write Docker files. But there are easier ways, again, through Maven plugins. There are a number of Maven plugins out there. These are the most popular one. The one I'm talking here is the Fabricate Maven plugin. And that Maven plugin have the following goals, which means, as a developer, you can do Maven clean install Docker build. And what will happen is that will build your application, then it will create a zip file with the Spring Boot, and finally it will put it in a Docker container. So with one command from Maven, you end up with a Docker container that you can run later. And if you look at the commands we've talked so far, with Maven cluster start, you can start a Docker or a Kubernetes cluster. With the next command, you can basically build your application, put it in a Docker image. And with the third one, you can basically say, Kubernetes, run my application, all from Maven. And that's a nice way to increase developer productivity. But let's say we have Kubernetes running either locally or on the cloud or a Google Compute Engine, doesn't matter, how we communicate with it. So we have to see how we can talk to Kubernetes. And there are things such as, you may want to say to Kubernetes, start 3 instances of my Docker container. And to start the Docker container, then you have to tell how should it start your Spring Boot or Tomcat in it. And you also have to tell it how much resources to give, which ports to export, and what environment variables to give, and maybe how much persistent storage it requires, and all kind of stuff. And the way you talk to Kubernetes is through its REST API. So Kubernetes has a REST API, and you basically send JSON to it. But in order to generate that JSON on hand can be quite difficult. For example, yesterday, DCOS guys sent the JSON to Mesos. It's similar in Kubernetes. You send the commands through JSON. To simplify that, there is, again, Fabricate Maven plugin with commands such as JSON, which will read your POM file and it will create for you JSON based on that. And whenever that POM file is not enough and you want to add more details, you can use a Java DSL. So with, this is an example of the Java DSL where you can basically enrich that JSON file with more information. You may want to say, I want one replica of my Docker container or three, and at compile time, this will generate a JSON file. Yeah. So your Docker image is just a binary. It doesn't have any information about how it should run and how much resources it should take, what environment variables. But this JSON file is kind of the contract between the Docker image and Kubernetes, and it describes everything. And probably this is one of the first patterns, I would say, because as a developer now, you also have to create this JSON file. It's not enough just to write the code. You also have to tell that your services needs disk mounted at certain location, that it expects this amount of memory. And maybe in the next version, you change your service and you have to regenerate these JSONs with the new requirements, etc. So the generating this descriptor file becomes a very important new step. With once you've written your service, you have to deploy it or run it in Kubernetes. And deployments in Kubernetes are a very important concept. Here are, for example, four examples of a declarative way of deployments. For example, this one is called recreate. The idea is if you have four Docker instances of your service version 1.0 and you want to upgrade it to version 1.1, you can create, say in your JSON file that the way you want it to be is through recreate strategy. That means Kubernetes will bring down all four instances and then it will start one by one new instances. So in this case, you will have some downtime because at the beginning, all instances are down. Another strategy is rolling updates. With this approach, Kubernetes will bring one Docker instance down and will start a new one with the newer version. Then it will bring the second one down and will start the new Docker instance. With this case, you don't have any downtime, but the side effect is you will have half of your services in version 1 and half of them in version 1.1 during the update. Yeah, it depends which option works for you. You can do even other stuff such as blue-green deployments. In this case, you have version 1 running up. You bring version 1.1 up and maybe you perform some testing and then you switch from the old to the new one. Or you can do things like canary release where you run all the version and the new one side by side to do some kind of user testing. So all that is possible through Kubernetes deployments described in the JSON file. Now for service to be started up and updated, Kubernetes needs a way to know whether your service has started. Yeah, this is where the health checks are required. For example, when you start up a Docker container in Kubernetes, Kubernetes will constantly check whether the Docker process is up. That's the process health check. But having a container up doesn't mean your application has started, the Spring Boot has started, that the camel context and the root and all the consumers has started and they've connected to the right file server, etc. For that, you need application health checks. And there are two kinds of application health checks, the readiness and the liveness. Readiness is used when you start a new Docker container. It uses readiness check to basically ensure that the application is up and ready. And only after the readiness check has passed, it starts directing traffic to your new Docker container. And when your application is up, it constantly uses liveness checks to guarantee that it is still up. Yeah. So in terms of camel, you would, in your readiness and liveness checks, probably you would check that all the contexts are up, that all the consumers can connect to external endpoints, and only then pass the readiness check. And in the liveness checks, you can just hit a JET endpoint or something like that to ensure that it's up. Here are examples how you define a liveness check in the JSON file. This is an example where you tell Kubernetes, just hit localhost 8080/health And if it returns anything between 200 and 399 HTTP status code, it means it's alive. Or you can tell it to execute a bash command that you can write from your CAML application. So these health checks are so important that even Java 8 has revised its plans. This is from, I think, a couple months ago when Java EE community decided which bits they want to drop from the JS 8. So things like JMS 2.1, MVC, and management, they want to drop it, and they've added two new sections. You see configuration and health check. And health check is basically a standardized way to report application health. We'll say probably in a year or two, every application will require to be able to report its health. And that will be part of Java EE. So it's not just a Kubernetes thing. It will be quite a standard thing. In CAML, we also have, I think, about JIRAs, where we want to add such a capability to the framework itself, so you don't have to do anything yourself, and it will provide such an endpoint. Other things that are available in Kubernetes are lifecycle hooks. So if Kubernetes, for some reason, wants to shut down your Docker container, typically it first will send a sick term signal. In Java, that means if you have a shutdown hook, that will catch it, and in CAML specifically, CAML context will start shutting down. Probably the difference is that after the sick term, after 30 seconds, if the application is still not down, Kubernetes basically kills your application. Yeah. In CAML, we give, I think, up to 5 minutes time for all the CAML routes to shut down. But by default, with the default configuration, Kubernetes probably will kill your application after 30 seconds, and you still may have some in-flight messages, and they'll be lost. So that's one thing to bear in mind. If your application, for some reason, cannot react to sick term or sick kill, you can use pre-stop hooks. Yeah, here is an example of a hook, which basically means Kubernetes will hit an endpoint, will somehow tell your application, I want you to shut down or I will kill you in 30 seconds. So you can implement a mechanism in your application to clean up all the messages or move them around, etc. Another important concept is termination message. Basically, for each Docker container, it will look at this location to find out why a Docker container was shut down. And that message is later showed at various logs or tools for the reason for shutting down. So when you're shutting down a container, you can just write there something meaningful because it will be used later to debug and find out reasons. Another thing that is changing is around application configuration. So previously, when you write an application, you have a jar and you know you shouldn't put anything environment specific there. But now it's not just the jar, you have the whole application, whether that's Carafe or Tomcat, in the Docker container, and it means you should not put anything environment specific there. So you cannot put in Tomcat users file any users, or in etc in Carafe, you cannot put any environment specific stuff because it will be in the Docker container, and that Docker container will be reused in all environments. So you have to externalize everything that's environment specific from the application. The good news is that there are now, with Docker, less things to externalize. For example, if you're writing a CAML route to consume files, probably you would never write it that way, and you always parameterize this, because on different environments, the path to the folder will be different. With Docker, you can hard code that. That is because when you start a Docker container, you can mount any path always to the same specific location. So your application always sees user share orders as the place where the orders are. It doesn't matter where the actual path on the host system is. So you need less configuration for file consumption. Another thing is, if you still need configuration, you can use you can use them, and CAML has been extended to support environment properties. Basically, the common way to pass configurations to Docker container is either to environment variables or to file system, where you have a folder with the properties, and CAML can do both of these approaches. So, for example, here to connect to an SFTP, we need a host and user and password, which probably will be different on each environment. So you can externalize that. Another area that is changing also significantly is service discovery. Typically, how would you service discover? You have an application, service consumer, let's say it's in Camel, and it has to call some other web service. The way to do that is these service providers register themselves to some kind of registry, and your application looks that up and then calls the service. But this registry here is either something like Zookeeper, where you need three instances, or it's either Netflix Eureka, and it has to be basically highly available, because if that registry is not there, your services cannot talk and discover each other. Another thing here is that your service needs an agent now. It needs a Java client to talk to that server and basically gather the IPs of a given service. The way to do this in Kubernetes is basically you have a service, okay, let's say a Camel route, and you want to call other Docker containers. The way you access them is to something called Kubernetes. It's again called service, but that's like a virtual IP or a virtual layer which has a fixed name. So if you look at the Camel route, if you want to call any of these Docker containers, you could use just an environment variable with the service name. Your Docker container at startup time will be populated with the environment variable, and that basically has information about all the other services in the platform. So if you scale these service providers, maybe from 3 to 4 Docker containers, they register themselves, and you don't have to change anything in your application. You don't need any kind of client on the JVM to talk to. You can just basically call always this service name, and you should actually hard code it, because if you know your order route needs to call an order service, you can hard code that. It won't change in during the environments. So you see that the responsibility is kind of moving from the JVM to the platform. On the JVM, you need less agents. You have to do less stuff. Everything is provided by the platform. Another reason to use cloud native is the ability to scale services. So you want to just start new Docker containers when the load on your application increases. Yeah, and Kubernetes will easily do that. It can start many containers for your application, but in order to do that, your application, Camel application, has to be written in a way that it allows to scale. For example, it has to be stateless. Yeah, keep in mind that some EIP pattern implementations are stateful. So if you have two Docker containers with a circuit breaker, one of them might be open while the other one is still closed, etc. You have to make sure that, for example, there is no locking issues, or if you consume from a queue, you have to make sure that you can still get them in order, etc. And sometimes, some use cases require you to have a singleton service. So you basically, you want to have only one route that consumes files from a folder. You shouldn't have two, otherwise there are some conflicting issues. And to do that, in Camel, is usually using one of these components. You either use Quartz, but then you need not in-memory database, but really a relational database, or you use Zookeeper component or JGroups. But all these solutions actually rely on some kind of external lock. Yeah. So when the first Camel route starts, it picks up the lock, it becomes the active one, and all the other Camel routes are basically slave. This ensures that the route is singleton. There is only one instance, but it's still highly available, since if you kill this route, the other one will start. Okay. This is again simplified in the thing. Losing my slide here. This simplified in Kubernetes, because in Kubernetes what you do is you just tell Kubernetes start one instance of this container. Okay, the difference here is that even though it's one instance, it's still highly available, because Kubernetes will constantly do process health check, application health check, and if for some reason your application is down, it will restart it. Yeah, so it's high availability with only one instance. You can still do that. In the microservices world, there are this kind of strategies, principles, how you place microservices. Here I have an example of one host, one VM with multiple microservices. There is also another example where you have one service per host, or you can have something like Carafe with multiple services and they share the same host. So, and there are lots of thinking around how do I group my services best way, so if there are some kind of dependencies, etc. And I would say all that, probably have to forget it and kind of trust Kubernetes to do the best scheduling of your services. So in Kubernetes world, you are not placing a Docker container on a node. You're just saying Kubernetes, start this container, and Kubernetes will find for you the most suitable node to run that container. And the way it does is, it first filters out all the nodes that are available based on some criteria. For example, maybe your Docker container requires a specific port to be open. It will check whether the host has such a port. Maybe your Docker container requires certain amount of shared volume, so it will check whether there is such a host with that prerequisite. It will check that there maybe the host name you require is there, so it can filter out all the hosts that match the criteria you have specified. Then in the second step, it will try to pick the best one out of the available options. So then it prioritizes them again using different kind of criteria. And it places your Docker container. It might be that the first container is on one host and the second one is on the second on a different host. And you kind of control all that through service affinity and anti-affinity. For example, this is just an example, you can say my service has region affinity, which means it should be always in the EU Amazon region. Then you can say it has also zone affinity, so it should be only in EU East or in one zone. But then it has rack anti-affinity, so it should be on separate racks on that data center. So if one rack fails, you still have the other one up. And you can create this kind of levels yourself that matches your infrastructure, so it's not fixed level of layers. This was just an example how you could match it to, let's say, Amazon Web Services. If we talk about some of the error handling patterns which are common in a cloud native world, probably the most popular one is circuit breaker, which comes from the Releasit book and it is inspired by real life circuit breakers. And in CAMEL we have basically at the moment still two implementations of that. One was implemented a long time ago, which is much simplified, and the later version is based on Hystrix. So Klaus already talked about that, but this is a pattern that you probably will continue using in a cloud-native world to protect your applications from other services that are slow or not responsive. Another pattern that is kind of the opposite of circuit break is the retry one. If you call a service and that service has not responded, very often the common thing is you just retry the same operation, you just recall again that external service, and CAMEL can do that very easily. So that's another pattern probably you would keep. In order to do retry, the other service has to be basically ready for retries, or it has to be idempotent. The idea of idempotent is if you call a service multiple time with the same parameters, it doesn't have any side effect. Certain operations such as get operations, delete operations are idempotent by nature, but other operations like create account are not idempotent. Every time you call, it would create a new account. So you may have to do some of your CAMEL routes idempotent. And if you do a service idempotent and you scale it on Kubernetes, you have to think about how can you make the idempotency repository shared between the instances. For that, probably you have to look at some of the distributed idempotent filters we have. I know that the InfiniSpan one has is supported on Kubernetes, so it can find other nodes which run on Kubernetes. Or you can use an external database where you write the data. The next pattern, which is still relevant in the cloud native world, is bulkhead, which is inspired by the bulkheads in the ships, that they are used basically to protect the ships from sinking. So if there is a hole somewhere in this department, the bulkhead protects the ship from the water spreading. And in software world, the idea is you structure your application in a way that if one part fails, that doesn't bring the whole system down. And to do that, actually, you have to think at multiple layers. For example, you have to make sure that maybe at infrastructure level, you run in two availability zones or in two regions. And maybe you have multiple VMs there rather than running everything on one VM. At the process level, you run multiple processes rather than having just one application server that all the services are running. And even in the application, you use multi-threading with separate thread pools, and that the whole application is not single-threaded or even single thread pool. In a Kubernetes world, actually Kubernetes will help you to solve some of the issues out of the box. For example, if you have a Kubernetes installed in a highly available way that spans multiple data centers, its scheduler will make sure that your application is spread into multiple data centers. Again, at virtual machine level, its scheduler again can make sure that your application is spread around well. So if an instance goes down, you still your application is still up while Kubernetes starts the, another instance. Probably these two levels are the one you still have to think about. So with Docker and Kubernetes, the containers are isolated well, but as a developer, you have to think how you can create a microservice, basically how I, which part of my application belongs to one process and which part belongs to the second process. So there's still some thinking you have to add at this level, and at the thread pool level, that's where basically CAMEL comes into the picture. You have to make sure that some of these components and patterns, which are multi-threaded, use separate thread pools and they don't block each other. Transactions. Guess you are familiar with local transactions and global transactions. Local ones are the one you use when you are interacting basically with one resource. So when you are interacting with ActiveMQ only, you have still a transaction manager. But if you are interacting, consuming from ActiveMQ and writing to a database, and you want the whole thing to be, you know, transactional, you use global transactions. Now, to have a global transactions, you need global transaction manager, which usually needs a data store to write the transaction log. And that is slightly more difficult on a cloud environment. Another thing is the distributed transactions are slow because it requires coordination. And briefly, I can say in the microservices world, they're considered as an anti-pattern now. So the solution for that is the Saga pattern, or the more popular name, which is compensating transactions. So if you're writing a service that has to interact with multiple other services, you write your CAMEL route in a way that you have a way to compensate the side effects. Let me give you an example. In this case, I have this composite service, let's say, that has a CAMEL route, and at the beginning of the route, it calls this service one, and the operation succeeds. Then it calls service two, and the operation succeeds again, but the third call here fails. In that case, what your CAMEL route has to do is basically do compensation for service one, kind of to revert the, what changes it has done, then to do compensation for service one, and again revert its previous effect. This way you have all these four services in a consistent way. This is not exactly equivalent to distributed transaction, because it is possible that your application dies while it's compensating, or the compensating operation may fail. So you still need a way to do maybe retries later, etc., and also make these compensating operations idempotent, so you can retry them at a later period, you know. But this like an eventual way of achieving consistency in the microservices world. Let's look at some of the new things that the Cloud Native platform enables us. For example, we've seen how many file transfer routes there are, typically. I mean, so what I'm trying to say is it's very common to have batch-based jobs in CAML. And in CAML, you can do that in a number of ways. You can use the timer component, the scheduler, the cords, and even the polling consumers. They have a kind of timer in them. And what does that mean? For example, you want to copy a file at midnight. It means you need to have a JVM that's up 24/7 just to do one operation at midnight, and that's it. So it is, I would say, there is lots of waste of resources. I mean, in any serious organization, you want to make that highly available. So you need like two small JVMs. You want to cluster them, and then you need monitoring agents, metrics, log aggregation, and so forth. So even such a small requirements can have a big resource consumption. Another thing is clustering such a thing. So if you want to cluster cores component, you need a relational database. If you want to cluster something else in with CAML, you need something like Zookeeper, which requires three hosts. Yeah, so there would say lots of complication even in a simple use case when you are talking about high availability. And the way Kubernetes simplifies that is it has something called jobs and scheduled jobs. So Kubernetes can start a Docker container at midnight, and you have your CAML application in it, and you copy the files, and you start shut down your Docker container. So you don't need a process to be running all the time just to do one operation at a certain time. The Kubernetes scheduled jobs, they support the cron syntax, so you can say, okay, run this Docker container at this time, and whenever your Docker Java application finishes, all it has to do is shut itself down. So you shut down the CAML context, and then Kubernetes will notice that the container has shut down successfully, and it won't schedule it till next time. If for some reason your container exits without a zero exit code, so something has failed, Kubernetes will restart it again. Okay, so I think this changes very much the way we do job scheduling. So you don't have to do it anymore in the JVM and think about how do I cluster it. You write a regular route where you copy files once and that's it. You don't need the cords or something like that. The platform will start your process and then shut it down and will start it next day. And maybe it has to, based on the resource availability, maybe next time it will start it on another host, etc. So it has a certain advantages. It can also run parallel jobs, so it may start two instances of a container to copy the files quicker, etc. So it's really a neat feature, but it's still in alpha, as you see in the version. So it's, what else? I mean, this is, I would say, a side effect of microservices. Once you split your application into multiple services, they start calling each other, and then basically you need tracing. Tracing is basically the ability to see how long it took a complete operation, how long it took in the individual microservices. And there are certain tracing libraries such as Zipkin, which are working well on Kubernetes, and the Fabric 8 team, for example, have have run it on Kubernetes, and this you can see an output of that. In this case, I have a service. It's quite unreadable, which is calling a second one, that's calling the third one. Yeah, and here in the stats, you can see how long it took for this service to respond, how long it took for this one to respond, and why the overall operation took a couple of seconds. So it gives you this kind of breakdown. And that's something, again, new that you didn't need, but in the microservices world, probably you need to have this capability on top of the monitoring and log aggregation. You need also tracing now. Another pattern, the canonical data model, I would say it is like the ESB of the data formats. Usually you have a team in a big organization that creates this data model that all the other services have to use and comply. And I've documented that briefly in my book, but I would say no one. It's again an anti-pattern in the microservices world. In the microservices world, you use something called bounded context, which you can think of as a small canonical data model per service or per group of services, but it's not this organization-wide canonical data model. And if I should summarize how these patterns are changing, I would say some of the patterns like canonical data model, distributed transactions are kind of anti-patterns now. Probably you shouldn't be using them in a cloud native world. Some other things like batch jobs and singletons, they are basically provided by the platform, so you don't have to worry about a developer, how do I run a batch job? The platform will do that for you. You just write your camel route to copy files and you don't worry how each will be scheduled. How do I place services on different hosts? Again, you shouldn't think about it. The Kubernetes scheduler will find the best host based on the policies you have specified and start your service. And reuse is, say again, creates dependencies between services, so it's considered bad practice in the microservices world. Instead, you duplicate. Then there are this column where things are new things that are coming up, like health checks. You need to have your application needs to be able to export its health. Things like circuit breaker and retries are still relevant, and compensating transactions, CQRS, retry, these are all still very relevant concepts. And you have to think about tracing. Now you have to add tracing to your application. So there's been quite a lot in 40 minutes, but if there are five things you should remember, I would say is that Kubernetes is a really awesome platform and a good place to run Apache Camel applications. And with Kubernetes, you have to worry about less things as a developer because the platform does many things which you used to do on just the JVM. But while writing your code, you have to think about resiliency and scalability. You have to use things like circuit breaker. You have to have bounded context. You have to write stateless services. So it's still important to write good code. And have a look at the Fabric 8 tooling. As you've seen, there are lots of developer productivity tools that will help you to easily move to cloud-native world. Yeah. Any questions? Yeah.
So my first question is about the saga pattern.
Yeah.
So from the camel route perspective, how what would be a nice, elegant implementation of this pattern?
Okay. So that is one of the patterns which, in my book, I just have it as a diagram. And I have a link where the pattern itself is explained in 1 hour talk, so just the concept. Then the way you implement it in camel would be with camel error handling. So for each operation, probably you will have an error handler that is able to compensate that. But the thing is, you want the compensation to happen only if something else down the line has failed. Yeah, so that's how much in details I can go. You have to implement it in camel, and we have done it in many places. It's not anything difficult, but there is not like a component which does that for you. It's a camel route structuring with error handling, and I think you can do it without any Java code because you are doing everything in XML. So that's still doable.
Okay, and the second question is, so I know how to shut down the camel context itself from inside the route. So I wonder if there is a, if you can suggest any way how to shut down the service mix if I run a camel inside the service mix from inside the camel.
So what you can use is Kubernetes pre-stop hook. So Kubernetes can do a call to your application. Yeah, it can execute stop sh file of service mix or something like that. So you don't have to shut it from your application. You can configure Kubernetes to call a service mix shutdown script and shut it down.
Okay, so my question is mostly in the context of if I execute a batch job and as soon as I'm done, I want to notify Kubernetes somehow, and you suggested to use an exit code, but you need to shut down the whole thing for that.
So in camel there, so just considering how to shut down service mix from Java coding or from camel itself, so and possibly without having to write any code. So in camel there is a
component.
Control bus component you can use to stop camel itself, but you need to stop service mix or the JVM itself. So that's a bit more trickier.
There is another component
but
which
you can use the
commands, like bash commands.
Yeah, you can use the exit one. There's an exit command, camel component. So you can call the exit camel endpoint with bin service mix stop. Or you can use the camel JMX component and find there's a JMX API inside Caraf where you can tell Caraf to shut it down. But there's no nice one line, you know, Caraf stop camel endpoint. But that's something we could add in the community. But still, if you make it too easy for people, they may abuse it just to start. So sort of like a service mix chaos monkey that starts stopping all your service mix. So. But definitely possible.
I think the solution with the that exec component still will be one-liner, you know, exec service mix bin stop sh, and it should stop the whole service mix.
And it's also a standard way of stopping service mix.
Yeah, so it will shut down everything nicely.
Thank you.
Any other questions? No. Good. Thank you, everyone. Thanks for your time.
Bilgin, can you tell people where they can find your excellent book?
Yeah, I mean, it was at the very first slide, so I have to go back. But it's on Amazon. It is on LeanPub. So if you're writing camel applications, I suggest have a look the camel design patterns. It basically have tips and common use cases and lessons I've learned from other projects. So you don't have to discover the wheel, just learn from the experiences of others. Check it on Amazon, I'd say.
Okay.
Cool.
Cheers.
Yeah. Thanks again.